Good afternoon, listeners. You're listening to EBC Radio. This is 1170 AM. It's time once again for Heartbeat. Heartbeat is an educational program about your health, which airs on EBC Radio every second and fourth Saturday of the month. I'm Dr. Dinesh Singhal. I'm an interventional cardiologist. I'm the director of the catheterization laboratory at St. Peter's University Hospital and an attending cardiologist at Robert Wood in New Brunswick and Princeton. For our regular listeners, you've been listening to the show. For any new listeners, this program airs every second and fourth Saturday of the month on EBC Radio on 1170 AM. You can also listen to us live on www.ebcmusic.com. So today, we again have a program dedicated to cancer care. And we are joined by Dr. Jonathan Rosenbluth. Dr. Rosenbluth is a medical oncologist, hematologist with Astera Cancer Care. And he has a specific interest, amongst other things, in focusing on the care of the elderly. As you all know, we've discussed this before, one of the challenges of longevity is some sort of medical issues, whether it's heart or unfortunately cancer. With the advances in medical care, we are living longer and longer, but that's kind of an unfortunate price we have to pay. But on the same token, there are advances in the care of in every field, including cancer, and we have a better understanding of how to approach individual cancers and then approach different patient populations. We haven't done a show in the past, just focused kind of on an age group. So Dr. Rosenbluth is going to help us focus on an age group and go over that. So with that, welcome Dr. Rosenbluth to Heartbeat.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, that's great. So how did you get interested in a specific age group? Cancers are kind of, most people kind of dedicate themselves to a special kind of cancer, but here you have a significant interest, I understand, on an age group. How did that come around?
Sure. Well, I think it really stems from the kind of oncology practice that I'm part of, that I have in general, which is really a community oncology practice. Community oncology is one where we treat patients that are in our region, that are in our local area, and really we treat any kind of cancer patient that comes to us, including solid tumor oncology, what we call liquid tumor or hematologic malignancies, as well as in other cases benign diseases that fall under hematology as well. So, but community oncology really means that you have to be up to date on the breadth of oncology and all of the different advances that are going on. But also the kinds of patients that we will tend to see are going to be patients for whom travel may be an issue for them to go to advanced tertiary care centers and so forth. And so, we need to be there for patients who are in our local community. I think that over the course of my years that I've been in practice, I've encountered a large number of patients who fall under the category of the elderly. What I've realized, of course, is when we look at the literature and we go by, of course, the data to try to establish the best care for our patients, we're finding that there's some lacking when it comes to our elderly population, who are underrepresented in a lot of the clinical trials that we are basing our treatment plans on. And so what I realized some time ago was that this really has to be an area of focus to treat the kinds of patients that are part of my main practice. I think it really grew from there, the interest. From a personal standpoint, I enjoy working with older patients. I enjoy having conversations that involve the kinds of their life experiences and so forth. And it just seems to be a fit for me from a personal standpoint as well.
So just to set the record straight, when you're focused on this older age group, what's your cutoff? Where do you start thinking about someone as older?
Right. I think when we, if we look at the literature, if we look at the organizations that discuss the guidelines for geriatric oncology, they'll typically discuss patients that are 65 and over. But I think that data is a little old at this point now. And honestly, we have a lot of patients that are probably coming up into their 70s who might not quite consider themselves to be the geriatric population. But in general, the recommendations are usually at 65 plus.
So I guess we're going to have to compartmentalize the discussion in a variety of ways. I'm thinking, from that age group standpoint, one, there are the specific kinds of cancers, because some may be more afflicting older people in that age group, and then the specific needs. So how would you think the discussion should proceed from this point on? Should we discuss like a cancer at a time, or you want to maybe give a global view of what generally might be in your mind when you're taking care of somebody in their 70s, 80s, just without being specific for a malignancy, and then we can kind of go into individual cancers.
Right. So I think that the interesting advancements actually that have been developing in recent years have been in regards to how elderly patients, how older cancer patients should be approached when they are initially diagnosed and before treatment even begins in terms of how they are assessed. And that's actually something that has been promoted by a lot of the oncology organizations these days. So I like to start with a general overview of how a patient, when they are diagnosed with cancer, because obviously, yes, we have different kinds of cancers that they can be diagnosed with. Obviously, there are some that are much more serious, advanced, or severe than others. But for most of the kinds of cancers we have, decisions have to be made about how management is going to proceed. And the decision making is really where I think geriatric oncology has the most, or the research has the most to offer in terms of the recommendations there. So I do like to start with an overview of saying, okay, so a diagnosis of cancer has been made. Where do we go from there? What's the what's the process? What's the procedure? So for that, we talk about the element of the assessment, or what we call the geriatric assessment, which is the a data-driven method of assessing a patient's characteristics and learning more about who they are. So I've actually heard a very interesting description of that. We all know about, when we talk about cancer diagnoses, that the stage is very important, right? We have different stages of the cancers, depending on at what point we've diagnosed it, what point we've caught the cancer. And the geriatric assessment is essentially a staging process of one's age. It's a way of determining who the person is, not just based on their number, but based on a lot of the different characteristics that are going to help us determine treatment, just the way a stage of a cancer would determine the best direction for treatment as well.
So what are some of the challenges you face when you're dealing with the elderly? Now, I know you alluded to some of them in terms of making choices, but give a couple of examples where you're dealing with a cancer and the patient's individual's age is now playing a role in you being able to decide what route to take. So maybe a couple of examples.
Sure, absolutely. So an example that we would commonly face might be a patient, a diagnosis of breast cancer, which would be, I think, a very common diagnosis that we'll see among older women and women. In fact, it's the most common form of cancer that women are likely to experience in their older age, so in their older years, so 75 and above, for example. One thing that will come up very often will be the question of whether the patient would require chemotherapy or some other form of treatment for what we would call adjuvant care. And that would mean once the cancer is detected, even in an early stage, the determination has to be made as to what the risk of that cancer recurring would be. And there are methods that we have once the cancer is diagnosed and even removed. It will be analyzed in a laboratory and it'll under will under will put it under multiple genetic tests to assess, really to try to do the best we can to predict the likelihood or risk of recurrence there. And that'll be on a scale. There'll be a spectrum there a score will be available to us for that particular individual. What would happen in that case is that it'll give us a risk of recurrence. We'll get a number that'll tell us, say, for example, there'll be a 20% risk in ones within the next 10 years of the cancer recurring. Well, I think what we would do in the situation of an elderly woman with this diagnosis is we would have to say, well, we have this risk here presenting to us. Now the question is, based on this particular individual's health and their comorbidities, which is the term we'll use to say their other diseases that they may have, they may carry with them, what is the likelihood, being realistic, that this particular patient is going to survive for the next 10 years because of their other health issues that they have? And so what we would do is we would want to get the best prediction possible for their longevity. And we have a lot of tools that we can use these days to try to do our best. Of course, we don't have a crystal ball. We're not able to make these predictions the way they do on television and say exactly how many years someone has. There's so many variables involved, but we do have data and we do have questionnaires and methods of scoring that can give us the best result possible to determine how likely a person is going to survive for the next 10 years and not have other health problems come about. And so what we want to do is to say, well, if we're going to embark on aggressive treatment here, we want that treatment to be something that's worthwhile for that patient. And so that would be a case where we might think twice about that.
So maybe at this point, what we can do is, let me just take maybe a specific organ one at a time, and maybe we can go down that route. And we'll kind of also focus not only on the treatment if a malignancy is diagnosed, but also the recommendations for screening and prevention, they keep changing and evolving. So maybe we can also focus on each of these organ systems, and then also how age would play a role in a little bit more in terms of the diagnostic tools and the treatment. So sure. Since you brought up breast cancer, why don't we just start with that? So tell us how somebody is over 65 or whenever, what's the screening recommendations once you reach a certain age?
Right, so there are various organizations that try to give us the best screening guidelines that they can, and they do change over the years. At this point right now, most of the main guidelines come from the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force, and we follow a lot of those guidelines more universally. The important thing is when it comes to screening is we have to think about the risks associated with screening too, and that we don't want to have too many issues come up with what are referred to as false positives, meaning where a screening test is done that can lead to additional testing, additional biopsies or surgeries, things that could be problematic for an older patient and can lead to complications on their own, not to mention, of course, the anxieties associated with that. But for the most part, when we deal with breast cancer, the general recommendation is that for average risk individuals, for average risk women, mammograms should be performed up until the age of 75 for just about everyone. Once we're past the age of 75, then it really depends on the individual and their discussions with their doctor. We may be dealing with a patient who has a strong family history where there are concerns that there may be for a higher risk of cancer, or that patient may have already had some form of early breast cancer, say a local non-invasive cancer that was treated at a very early stage. Or we may be dealing with a patient who is whose health is way above average and who has a longevity that would surpass most people at that age at 75. So those would be situations where we might extend that screening. But 75 is a recommended cutoff point for that.
And to clarify, these are annual mammograms, right?
And these are generally annual by most recommendations, although if you look at the guidelines, they actually say that 1 to 2 years is sufficient for average risk individuals.
If somebody's for some reasons not been getting them, I'd just like to clarify. So does a patient need a prescription to go get a mammogram, or they can just call a radiology place and they can do it over there?
I think it's important for them to get a prescription, not only because of whatever the requirements are, but it's very important to have a doctor to review that mammogram with and to keep track of those mammograms as well. So it really helps to have that medical home, that person that you can, that doctor you can go back to and review. And then, of course, discuss as one ages to make that decision, determination together about whether to continue with screening. So absolutely, I would recommend it. Even if the insurance doesn't require it, I'd recommend it.
And in these days, do the results come through the doctor who wrote the prescription, or the radiologist is in a position to give the results directly to a patient?
So radiologists will often send patients directly a summary of their mammogram report because they want them to know if there is a result that's positive. They want to make sure that that's taken care of as soon as possible. And of course, patients and patients' families are their best advocates no matter what. And so I think that's probably the reason why I think those reports have been more and more commonly sent to both the doctor and the patient.
So, and now just going back to the management, I know you've given us an example of someone where they have a diagnosis at an older age and how it plays into a role. But, typically for, as a non-oncologist, my understanding is you have three modalities of treatment available to you: surgery, radiation, and chemotherapy. In an elderly, in general, is it the staging of the cancer which drives what modality would be most appropriate for them, at least as far as surgery and radiation is concerned? Actually, it'll probably be all, tie in all the three modalities as far as age is concerned, and maybe,
Right. So just as you mentioned, yes, I also like to present that to my patients when discussing with them, at the very beginning, when a diagnosis has been made, and explain to them all of the different options we have and have them understand why we would choose one over the other and so forth. So, right. So when it comes to surgery, the main way I describe surgery is that it's a definitive therapy in the vast majority of circumstances. If the cancer can be removed in its entirety, then surgery is most often employed in that situation. An example would be, even in our elderly population, an early form of colon cancer. Colon cancers can be found by methods either they present because of some bleeding issues that have developed, or they're anemic, which means that their blood counts have dropped because of that bleeding, or they're having some gastrointestinal problems. And what can be found is a mass in the colon, a tumor that can be partially obstructive or almost near obstructive. And in a situation like that, surgery really has to be the method of treatment in that case. If it's an early cancer that's formed, say on a screening colonoscopy and so forth, again, surgery would be the appropriate way to approach that. But what I also like to tell my older patients is that sometimes the way they think about surgeries that they've been very aggressive, that they've involved large scarring with a lot of recovery time, that's improved as well. And these days, most colorectal surgeries involve less invasive camera-based surgeries in most cases. They're not always possible, but whenever possible, our surgeons are performing what we refer to as laparoscopic surgeries. And those have quicker times to recover. And again, our elderly patients can do quite well with those. And I've had patients well into their 90s who've had those surgeries.
So just going back to breast cancer for a moment. So in your mind, is there a cutoff for a surgery for diagnosed breast cancer?
I wouldn't go so far as to say that there's a cutoff for that surgery. I think that what has to be assessed in those situations with the help of our cardiologists like yourself, as well as other physicians for whom that patient are necessary to get advice from, say a pulmonologist or a nephrologist, is to say, based on the patient's comorbidities, how much risk is there in the surgery moving forward? And for an example, so a breast cancer would be an interesting approach there. If we're dealing with someone who has a lot of other health issues and there is a breast mass, while it would seem to be a very straightforward thing to do a lumpectomy, that lumpectomy is going to involve general anesthesia. It's going to have some complications potentially that could result from that. And I think knowing about that in advance is very important. And let's just say we're dealing with a situation where those risks would be quite high. Well, in that situation, we may look towards other treatment options rather than the full resection. So for example, radiation can certainly help in that circumstance. And the other issue with breast cancer, which happens to be an interesting fact and statistic, is that the older patients that we have with breast cancer, they tend more often to have what we call hormone positivity, which means that we find the presence of the high presence of hormone receptors on those cancers, more so than in our younger population. And when those receptors are present, the tumors tend to be very susceptible, very sensitive to the use of hormone-based therapies. And those hormone-based therapies are generally oral rather than intravenous. They tend to have far fewer side effects than chemotherapy would. And just in general, they're just very well tolerated and they can work very well. In some cases, better than chemotherapy. So, and they can be taken for many years as well. So we've had situations where a patient may be too frail, too high a risk for that surgery, even though that would seem to be the definitive way to eradicate that cancer, but instead we'll employ these other methods to treat instead.
And if you were to, if someone does need intravenous chemotherapy, is there a cutoff for age in your mind when you feel that a patient won't tolerate it, or it's just the general condition of the patient which kind of drives that decision?
So yes, I think, again, going back to, and this is really where the whole idea of the geriatric
I'm focused on breast cancer right now.
Oh, sure, for breast cancer, right. I think that chemotherapy is used less and less often in breast cancer specifically these days for our elderly population. We do have regimens that are available. We'll give them to our fittest patients. But when we do reach patients at a certain age, we will be very careful and cautious about using chemotherapy. So, well, again, not a specific age, but I would say even if we're dealing with someone at 75 or 80 years old, we'll be pretty cautious about using chemotherapy. And so for an example, one of the things that we may consider doing, which we have this ability in oncology, is making some modifications from the standard treatment regimen that we might that we may have. So this is very common. That's done by most oncologists, where we'll consider starting off, for example, at a dose reduced level for the chemotherapy that we would choose. We know it's effective, but we also know because of the toxicity levels would be so high that we would start off on a lower dose. Now, some patients can tolerate it very well, which means we might even escalate it as they go along if they're handling it well. But we don't want to shock their system and obviously have them develop such severe side effects that they would end up in the hospital or worse. So that doesn't benefit anyone in any circumstance. So that would be one option. The other option is that often chemotherapy drugs are used in combination, something that we'll call doublets in therapy, which have found to be very effective, but also very toxic for older patients. So often the recommendation will be to use one rather than two drugs to treat the patient. So these are some options that we have that we consider case by case to treat our patients with the best balance possible.
And just one quick question before we go for a commercial break. So if you were to send a patient for or consider a patient for radiation, does a radiation oncologist ever turn around and say, well, this is too old for me to kind of work with this patient, or I wouldn't advise? Or again, it's a general condition of the patient.
Yeah. In most cases, radiation can be used well in our older patients. Actually, the data shows that about as much as 75 to 90% of patients can tolerate most courses of radiation very well and safely. So in most cases, we do. I think the challenges with radiation are more logistical than anything else. Remember, whereas chemotherapy treatment, for example, requires coming in once, maybe twice every 3 weeks or so, with radiation, it's typically for several weeks in a row, daily. And that involves travel, coming in and out of the clinic. Again, there are many patients who can do that and well into their older years. But sometimes when patients have limited mobility and they're quite weak and frail, just that process can be very tiring. And so we tell them up front, we remind them, this is what it would involve. The other thing is the side effects really depend on where the treatment is, what part of the body is being affected. If someone has a head and neck cancer, say an oral cancer.
We're going to come back right after the commercial break.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to ABC Radio. This is 1170 AM. I'm Dr. Dinesh Singhal. We've been talking to Dr. Jonathan Rosenbluth. He's a medical oncologist, hematologist with Astera Cancer Care. We'll be back right after this commercial break. Thank you.